I'm going to call this meeting of the House Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Preparedness to order for Thursday, April 16th. Welcome all of you here. First item of business, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3532. Mr. Administrator.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 3532 establishes a task force to study how to provide benefits for disabled veterans through the Preferred Worker Program. Requires the task force to submit recommendations to the Legislative Assembly by 15 September 2016, declares an emergency effective on passage. There's no revenue impact. There may be a fiscal impact. And there is a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. Representative Witt isn't here yet, but we'll go ahead with this part of the public hearing, and I'll just hold it open until he gets here. So I have Mark Davidson and John Schultz. Please give your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm John Schultz. I'm the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And you may remember that I testified on a very similar bill, House Bill 3116. Just seems like a few days ago. HB 3532 establishes a task force to evaluate creating a program for disabled veterans modeled after the Preferred Worker Program, which is part of the workers' compensation system here in Oregon. We understand this bill is more in line with what Representative Witt preferred, and HB 3532 does still require, like the House Bill 3116, that Department of Consumer Business Services staff the task force and reimburse expenses of task force members from funds appropriated to the department for task force expenses or purposes. There are no funds appropriated under the bill as written. Given the large number of bills assigned to DCBS this session, we may need to establish some funding to support the task force efforts, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you have today.
Thank you very much. Go ahead, sir.
Chairman Lively, my name is Mark Davison, and I'm currently the president of the Oregon Self-Insurers Association in Oregon, handling workers' compensation. I have been involved in workers' comp since I was 14 years old when my dad fell off a roof and lost his sight, and I lived with him for 28 more years, and so I have an intimate understanding of living with a severely disabled injured worker. I worked for a major employer in Oregon for 50 years, and I handled their workers' compensation program, amongst other things, in risk management. Fortunately or unfortunately, I've worked with this gentleman right here. So far, I can't think how far back it's been, but we've done an awful lot of good things in Oregon. In 1990, Governor Goldschmidt appointed me to the Mahoney Hall Task Force that rewrote the workers' comp laws. And you all, if you don't know, you should know, and it did make Oregon a leader in the United States that still continues today in cost to employers and benefits to workers. And in the 1990s, after the reform, I was on the Management Labor Advisory Committee appointed by Governor Roberts, and I was co-chair of that committee. It was during that time that we worked with Mr. Schultz and his workers' comp department to create the Preferred Worker Program for Injured Workers, which is a program that provides tremendous incentive for employers to aggressively go out and hire injured workers. And the evidence is in the reports that are available to show you how much has been spent every year in that program. There are some financial benefits to the worker, some programs available to the worker going into this, and I don't want to get into the minutiae of how and what they are, but the benefits to the employer are very powerful. There's wage subsidy for a period of time. There is premium relief, no workers' comp premium paid for a lengthy period of time, and there is indemnification against any new claim that the worker might have, which is, I think we found in workers' comp, and John would agree, that many employers were reluctant to hire injured workers with disabilities, and that's what this is. It's an injured worker with a disability. And although employers aren't going to stand up and say, I don't want you because you had a back injury and you have a 30% disability, in the back of their minds they're thinking, this is a worker that could get hurt again and I could get stuck with it, and they're very costly claims. So we have an indemnification. During a certain period of time, regardless of how you get hurt, it's covered by the Preferred Worker Program. Now, that Preferred Worker Program is funded out of the Worker Benefit Fund, which was created in the mid-90s. correct me if I'm wrong. And what it did was it amalgamated a whole bunch of other funds in the workers' comp department, the handicapped workers' reserve, those among others. It all came into one pool of money. And that pool is funded, it's a dedicated agency. It's funded by assessments to employers. That whole building is. All of their activities are. General fund monies don't support that. So this worker benefit fund was established, and it's funded by contributions from workers at a cents per day contribution. It started out around one penny per day. I think it's up to 3.5 maybe now or something like that. And it's a contribution by workers for every hour. It's an hourly contribution that they make, and it's matched by their employer. So that's the revenue that goes into this thing. And the reason I point that out to you today is it has been, as a veteran, a Vietnam veteran myself, and with a disability rating, I've been ashamed to be involved with the VA for years because of the way we were treated when we came home in 68. And so I avoided any activity until now we see that what a great reception these men and women are getting coming back from the Middle East. And so it's been much easier, and I'm now involved with the VA hospital in my medical care and all. So I began thinking years ago about injured veterans and getting employers with an incentive to hire them. Now, there's federal laws that mandate preference to veterans, so they've got all kinds of activities. But we still have a lot of veterans with physical disabilities that just can't find work. And in workers' comp, and John will tell you, the most important thing in the recovery of a worker is not just the surgery that's given to the worker. It's not just the counseling. It is the job that the worker has to go to work in the rest of his or her life. That is the icing on the cake. That is truly getting the worker functionally restored to returning to the workplace. And that's something I've always thought we need in the Veterans Administration. So I came up with this idea. I presented it to Cameron Smith at the Veterans Committee. Made a presentation out at their meeting a couple of years ago, and it was very well received. I presented the idea to some of the leadership in the Oregon Guard at one of our self-insured association meetings, and they very well received by them. And as I told you earlier, I co-chaired the Management Labor Advisory Committee with Representative Witt. So I thought, well, now here's a guy I can lean on for a favor. Sure enough, he's produced this bill. With regards to this bill, the earlier version of this bill was written in such a way that this particular study would be directed at infusing the National Guard, or the Oregon veteran, National Guard is what I was focusing on, into the worker benefit program as it is. And there was testimony that these National Guards men and women haven't paid into this program before, and then the revision of the bill shows that they'll pattern it after that. I want to remind you folks that lots of high school students leave high school, get injured first few weeks of employment, they never paid into it. Neither has people who move into Oregon from other states who might get hurt. They've never paid into it. And if you read every line of the language in this administrative rules on this thing, this bill, on the preferred worker program, there's no language that excludes anybody because they haven't paid into it. And one thing to remember, if they get a job, they will be paying into it. That's the whole idea, get them back to work, and then they will be contributing members into that program. That would be my only criticism now, that we're not task forcing and looking at infusing it in the program. We're going to pattern it after the program. It's a good step. It's the right step to take. I'm very proud to have brought the idea up to Representative Witt. I'm proud to be here in front of you today. I'm disappointed with one other option, and that's a 3-year time frame before we even see anything. I don't like – I could be – on the wrong side of the grass, you know, if 3 years goes by before this ever really takes place. And I would hope that the task force can move a little quicker than some of the deadlines pointed out here. And I just encourage you to support the investigation of that and move forward wherever the funding is found. I believe it can be found in the Worker Benefit Fund. And forgive me, John, but if you look at that Worker Benefit Fund since the mid-90s, it's been swept. It's been swept. Okay, as other funds have been swept, because there's been too much money in it. So, I mean, that's the only reason I can think. So if it's been swept, maybe it isn't always underfunded. There's plenty of money there. I want to thank you, and I'll answer any questions.
Any questions of these witnesses? Escobar.
Yes, you said that they were indemnified for a period of time. I kind of hung on that. What does that mean?
Well, I'll tell you, Representative Escobar, that what that means is that for a employment, let's see, exemption premium. I believe it's a there's a three-year. It's 3 year.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have 3 years after I go to work for an employer. If I get hurt on the job,
it's no cost.
It's no cost to that employer for that injury.
Follow up.
Certainly, go ahead.
I just can't believe, though, that we're in a position where we haven't had something established before or some kind of a structure to do this in the past. I mean, this isn't something new.
No, I think we've relied, Representative, on the medical treatment and the general care and the concern we have for our veterans. I don't think we've looked at the picture of functionally restoring them and making sure that that job and incentive is there for those employers. We learned that there wasn't incentive. We learned it in the workers' comp department. And for years, we just, you know, we treated them, we got them well, we got PPOs were established, good surgeons, we got occupational people involved. And then we thought, wait a minute, we're missing the piece of putting these people back to work. And we had light duty work was a huge part of the reform in 1990. Get those people back to light duty. And the employers said, I'm a little leery of that person with an injury, you know. And so we began to realize that we need to incentivize them. And this, John will tell you, this has done it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're a Vietnam veteran, so I wanted to welcome you home.
Thanks, sir.
We've never done that. It was never done, so welcome home.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Representative Evans.
Yes, I also want to thank you for your service and to represent Vesquel's point. Earlier attempts really had been focused on trying to get employers to want to hire vets that didn't necessarily have an injury, or it was hard enough to get folks that weren't injured. But I'm very excited about the approach that you have here, and I agree wholeheartedly about if folks are hired out of high school, they haven't paid in, but once they get in, then they will. I think that's a rational, smart plan. I just appreciate this very much.
Well, I watched the testimony, Representative. The last time you had this bill on this table, I was unable to attend because I wasn't feeling well. So I logged in on my computer and I watched the testimony. And when this good friend of mine to the right said that, I thought, well, there's high school kids that don't pay. There's lots of people that haven't paid into this program. Why is that any kind of a concern to bring up now? You know? So, anyway.
Any other questions? I have a question, Mr. Schultz. We have had quite a few conversations in here about task force and what they cost or they don't cost in other places. I'd just like to hear within your group the approach to that, because you talked about at this point this bill does not include money to pay for the task force. So historically, within your department, have they accommodated these? Is it part of a general budget request? Or how generally do we deal with the cost of task force?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Historically, we've had a lot of our task force work has gone through the Management Labor Advisory Committee, which is a standing advisory committee for workers' compensation. So in just my little slice of the world, we are very fortunate we have a legislatively mandated advisory committee that already helps us with that. And they're reimbursed for travel, parking. It's a volunteer advisory committee, although I must say they work really hard and do good work. So it hasn't been expensive in my experience. And what I think that this bill presents is an opportunity to coordinate amongst a lot of groups, agencies as well, who have a piece of either working with the veterans or disabled veterans or employment, or have experience and knowledge working with a program like this, like we do, where we could put our resources together and I think create something that could truly be helpful to disabled veterans who are needing help returning to employment. So I don't see this as something that's going to be that expensive. I think there's a lot of resources out there, and I think there's a lot of interest out there. I'm thinking we're probably talking about reimbursing people's travel, reimbursing people for parking here in Salem if they're not coming from a close agency. So I don't know yet, because I don't know how often the task force would meet, but I'm thinking we're talking about something under $5,000 at. And I'm thinking that's very high when I mention that number. Our work usually doesn't cost anywhere near that amount. Now, one thing I would add to that is I'm not talking about staff time.
No.
For all the agencies, I think staff time would be something that you figure into the process. You know, the way I look at that is we're already paying for staff time. It's just what are we working on at that time? And this is what we would turn our attention to.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. That's helpful to have that conversation. I just know we are going to have more conversations next week about the fiscals on task force and that, but I like the approach and what you're suggesting there. It makes great sense to me. Representative Esquivel. Yeah,
thanks for bringing that up, John. It's amazing to me that some of the departments act like they have someone in the back room and they don't pay them until such time we walk through the door with a task force. Then they start putting them on the payroll, you know. Well, that is, I don't know, I understand how and the chair and I have discussed this, how you can have one task force that's $5,000, $10,000. You have another one that's $48,000. You have one that's $102,000. And I'm wondering how that can be with the same number of people. But we'll get to the bottom of it, I
think.
Yes,
we will. Any other questions? Great. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You could do that too. I'm going to close the public hearing on 3532, but I will reserve the opportunity to reopen and if Representative Witt is able to make it. We're going to move now to work sessions, and I want to announce first that House Bill 2838 that's on our schedule is going to be carried over until Tuesday, 421. And House Bill 2897 also will be carried over until Tuesday, 421. And remind members, that's the last day we're able to take any action. So hopefully the paperwork and everything will be ready on that day for us to be able to take action.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could we see, maybe take a vote and allow Representative Evans to be on this co-chair of this task force?
I think that would be. I think we could do that, though. Mr. Esquivel. Like we could start assigning.
There
right.
You go. Sorry, Paul.
No.
Well, actually, I'm not.
No.
Very excited.
Okay, I'm going to open a work session on HCR 22. Mr. Administrator.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, HCR 22 memorializes specialist Taylor Daniel Marks. There's no fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and the committee last heard the measure this Tuesday, 4:14.
Thank you.
Chair Lively, I move HCR 22 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Boone moves HCR 22 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay. Please call the roll.
Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Paluso?
Excuse.
Chair Lively?
Aye. Motion carries, and I'll close the work session on HCR 22. Oh, sorry. You know, you think I'd remember that? It's just written in big letters and highlighted. I ought to remember. So, Representative Evans, are you going to be carrying this?
Yes, please.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you. So now I'll open a work session on HGM 3. Mr. Administrator.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, HGM 3 urges Congress to enact legislation requiring the stabilization of crude oil prior to transport. The committee heard this on 324. There is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Okay.
Chair Lively, I move HJM 3 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Boone moves HJM 3 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, please call the roll on final passage.
Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Paluso?
Excused.
Chair Lively?
Aye. Motion carries. I'll close the public hearing on HJM 3, and we'll ask Representative Witt to carry that since that's his. I'm sure he will. Okay, so now open a public hearing or a work session on House Bill 2818.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 2818 adds the Oregon Volunteer Firefighter Association to the list of entities eligible for an income tax return checkoff. The committee met on 3/12. Revenue impact statement has been issued for the purposes of moving this measure to the House Committee on Revenue, and there is no fiscal impact.
Representative Boone.
Well. Chair Lively, I move House Bill 2818 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Representative Boone moves House Bill 2818 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the House Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Yes, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say thank you to you and the committee for doing this. This is historic, history in the making. Attempt number 7.
Okay.
Hopefully we can get it past the Revenue Committee and to the floor and then on the other side. Number 7. Count them.
Historic history.
That's really historic. Yeah.
See, Representative Huffman and you and I have been on this for quite some time.
We have.
It's kind of like Groundhog Day with this one.
It is. So I'm one happy clam today. Good. So
you're to be commended for your diligence in sticking with this.
I'm Swedish.
Okay, please call the roll on final passage.
Vice Chair Booth?
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Really? 7 times?
Aye.
Representative Paluso?
Excused.
Chair Lively?
Aye.
Motion carries. Congratulations.
I think Rep. Boone might want to carry that bill.
when it gets out of revenue.
That's right, when it gets out of revenue.
I'd be happy to.
Okay, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2919. Mr. Administrator.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House Bill 2919 removes the reporting requirements of cellular device location used to call 911 in an emergency. Committee met about this at the beginning of this month on April 2nd. There's no revenue impact, minimal fiscal impact, and there's no subsequent referral.
Okay. Any discussion on this bill? Seeing none, please call the roll on final passage.
I think
Mr. Boone?
Aye.
Mr. Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Huffman?
Yes.
Representative
Parrish?
Yes.
Representative
Paluso?
Just start over.
Sorry.
He's faster than I am.
There wasn't any motion, but it's nice that we're
voting. You all voted on motion.
Okay, take all that back. We're going to start over.
Chair Lively, I move that House Bill 2919 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Representative Boone moves House Bill 2919 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, now I'll call the roll on final passage.
Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Huffman?
Yes, again.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Paluso?
Excused.
Chair Lively?
Aye. Motion carries. So, and we need a carrier. Is somebody here?
Esquivel, isn't it?
Willing to carry this bill on the floor?
If he doesn't want to. Esquivel? Is this your bill?
If you need me to.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for volunteering.
I volunteer Huffman.
Oh, that's all right, too.
Just like the military.
Yeah. If you don't want to, I'll do it. I just thought it was your bill. Maybe not.
Okay. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3395. Mr. Administrator.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 3395 establishes the All Funds Crisis and Disaster Resourcing Task Force. It requires the task force to report to the Legislative Assembly by 15 September 2016. The task force sunsets on December 31st, 2016, declares an emergency effective on passage. There is no revenue impact. A fiscal impact statement has been issued for the purpose of moving the measure to its subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Chair Lively.
Thank you.
I appreciate your effectiveness and efficiencies. I move House Bill 3395 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Boone moves House Bill 3395 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Vice Chair Espinal?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Excused.
Chair Lightley?
Aye. Motion carries. Close the work session on House Bill 3395. And I will now open a work session on House Bill 2566. Mr. Administrator.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as you'll recall, House Bill 2566 exempts out-of-state businesses on a temporary basis solely for the purposes of disaster emergency work on critical infrastructure from paying state taxes operating at the request of a registered business within the state. Directs Department of Administrative Services to credential as specified. We met on 317, and again today, before you, you have the proposed Dash 5 amendments. These clarify the language of what a out-of-state employee is, clarifies the equipment brought into state, removes the on-request, and directs that out-of-state businesses shall submit information to the Department of Administrative Services, and clarifies that a registered business or business that's registered in the state must request the services of an out-of-state business for operating and for the purposes of repairing critical infrastructure.
Okay.
There is a revenue statement been issued, minimal fiscal, and that revenue for the purpose of continuing on to the Committee on Revenue by subsequent referral.
Okay. Any discussion of the amendment or questions about the amendment? Okay.
Chair Lively, I move to adopt the Dash 5 amendment dated 4/13/15.
Representative Boone moves to adopt the Dash 5 amendment dated 4/13/15. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, the amendment is adopted.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 2566 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Revenue.
Representative Boone moves House Bill 2566 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the House Committee on Revenue. Any further discussion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Vice Chair Espinal?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Excused.
Chair Lively?
Aye. The motion passes and the bill is sent as amended to the House Committee on Revenue. Close the work session on House Bill 2566. Again, just a reminder, we carried over House Bill 2838 and House Bill 2897 to Tuesday of next week. Representative Escobar.
Yes, Mr. Chair, a couple things. One is that the bill that I was assigned to carry actually is sponsored by Representative Olson.
Okay.
And I think we should let him. I'm not sure that we did the last bill, 2566. Did we assign anyone to that bill?
It's going to revenue. Yeah.
Okay, my sheet doesn't say that.
Oh.
The committee had to add on subsequent referral to revenue.
Okay.
So it won't officially pop up until after the gavel.
Very good. Thank you.
Any other?
So Olson on 29.
Olson will. 19. Yes. We'll have Representative Olson here. Thank you for that.
It's his and Barker's.
Yeah, that's right.
They could do a co-carry.
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 I don't know if there's enough to talk about, but two of them.
Anything else to come before the committee? Okay. If not, what adjourn.
Good job.
We made it. What adjourn.
Good job.
We made it.